Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page with myself, Patrick Donoghue. On the show today, Dublin will begin their quest to become the first team to win five successive All-Ireland football titles when they face Louth on Saturday night. In 1982, Kerry fell short in their attempt to win five in a row when they lost in a dramatic All-Ireland final to Offaly. Offaly's manager that day was Eugene McGee, who sadly passed away earlier this month. My guest on the show today is Michael Foley of the Sunday Times, who wrote about Offaly's shock victory in his book, The Kings of September. And I'm delighted to say that Michael is on the line. Michael, thanks a million for joining me this evening.
No problem, Patrick.
So, Michael, Eugene McGee, he was one of these guys that when he took the Offaly job, it was a surprise appointment when he took the job.
It was, because he wasn't a well-known, I suppose, national figure in GAA terms. Mm. He was a journalist, so obviously his byline would have been seen in newspapers and whatnot. But as a coach, he would have coached UCD.
Mm.
But I suppose the fact that it wasn't a national sort of a gig, the Sigerson Cup and that at that time, and the Dublin County Championship, he'd been very successful. But he still wasn't nationally known. But what he actually did with UCD in relation to making them competitive with St. Vincent's around the same time when Kevin Heffernan would have been at large, would have marked him out. And certainly the way he would have coached that UCD team was quite revolutionary for the time. He was doing things that were very different to everybody else. And he would have brought all that to Offaly. But it was taken as a strange appointment.
Mm.
But at the time, I suppose, Offaly were thinking in a slightly different way to lots of other people. Father Sean Heaney would have been the county chairman.
Mm.
And he would have pushed hard for McGee. And at the same time, he would have also been the guy who would have pushed hard for Dermot Healy to come in over the hurlers after that. So, you know, they were looking out and beyond and trying to improve themselves whatever way they could.
And you mentioned innovation. That's one thing that struck me when I was reading the book. Like things like the video analysis and even looking across the water. He paid a visit to Arsenal. He just seemed to be a really, really innovative coach that was ahead of his time.
Yeah, I think it helped in a way that he wasn't a decorated footballer himself. In fact, he would freely have said himself that he wasn't much of a footballer at all.
Mm.
So I suppose he was open to the idea of looking at different ways of winning things. And also, coming from North Longford, you know, his ambition for a guy coming from a very rural part of a very rural, a very, very, I suppose, remote part of a very rural part of Ireland, his ambition was immense, you know, but to make that happen, I mean, if you look into his background, for example, his brother would have been Father Phil McGee, who was a very big mover in the Longford County board circles in and around the kind of 60s in particular. And Father Phil would have got one of the great Cavan footballers back the years, back from the 40s, to come and coach Longford in the 60s. And they would have won they got to a league final, they didn't win a league, certainly won a Leinster title anyway, under that particular guy. So the McGees were always sort of outward looking. But I mean, Eugene, as you say, yeah, he would have gone to Arsenal in the mid-70s. He took Richie Connor, who went on to play for Offaly for a long, long time, would have gone over with him to have a look at Arsenal in the era of Stapleton and O'Leary and Brady. He took a big old kind of video camera to a match one time and recorded it. They went back the following week then to watch the video back. He stuck it in the big old clunky VCR, press play, and all he could see was fog. The fog or whatever, the fog had kind of distorted everything, so they couldn't even see the game they had recorded. But it was the idea behind it. He was into diet. He was very conscious of what they were eating, sort of, and how that could maximise performance in terms of what they're eating before matches. Like, all this stuff that sounds very straightforward now. And even 20 years later, 30 years later, but like, back in the 70s, going into the early 80s, not a lot of people doing it, you know. Even a little thing like giving instruction to each player about the opponent that they'd have on the coming Sunday. I mean, teams just did not do that.
Mm.
But McGee had everything analysed and every margin reduced to as little as possible to give Offaly the best possible chance of winning.
Mm. And in your research for the book, he had the reputation of being quite a gruff character. But when you spoke to the players, did they have an enormous level of respect for him and his coaching methods?
It was an interesting experience, and I suppose we're going back. That book was written, the book came out in 2007, so I was doing the interviews trying to through 05, 07, so that would have been 20-odd years on. We're now 30-odd years on. I think as you get older, you get a different perspective on all sorts of things, and certainly for the players of that era, I mean, when they were being coached by him, a lot of them would have found him very, very hard to deal with altogether.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he wouldn't have been a man for great conversation, but at the same time then, I mean, the likes of a Sean Lowry, who would have won All-Ireland medals in the early 70s and was still there in 82, would say that, you know, McGee would have called to his house of an evening, would have stayed talking about the team and about what they were going to do until maybe 1 or 2 in the morning, would have stayed in Lowry's house and would have been gone in the morning before Lowry got up. He would have even stopped, you know, he would have just been gone. So he had this ability also to kind of engage with people. And I mean, I suppose it's like anything in these things. When you see results turning and you see things going well, you will put your faith in that guy regardless of your relationship with him. But I knew him, I suppose, from working and stuff like that. I would have known him for over 20 years.
Yeah.
But he had that sort of charisma that you could absolutely see, even though behind the gruffness and everything, he did have ways of getting to people. And I always thought that, you know, apart from Offaly, I mean, there was one year in UCD where he got the Sigerson Cup panel training at 6 o'clock in the morning in winter.
Yeah.
And I mean, to get a bunch of students out in the winter time training and to keep them and to hold them, you know, he had that. But as time went on, I mean, the players, the Offaly players of that generation certainly appreciated what he brought to it. They would have had differing views on his tactics and maybe how he developed the team at times over the years. But in the totality of it, I mean, they couldn't but agree that, I mean, he transformed that Offaly team from a team that was going absolutely nowhere in say around 1976-77. So you're talking inside of 5-6 years into All Ireland champions. I mean, if you think of that in modern day terms, that's a hell of a turnaround.
Yeah, it is really staggering. And in the early days, he seemed to have battles with the county board, who, you know, even getting his team selection. So in the first couple of years he was there, he had to fight hard to get total authority and to be able to pick the team that he wanted to pick.
Yeah, and that comes back, I suppose, a little bit to the culture he was going into. I mean, you had a quite progressive chairman in Father Sean Heaney. Then you had an Offaly County Secretary, John Dowling, who went on to be a president of the GAA in the late 80s. But John Dowling would have been a conservative, really. And even the idea of bringing in a journalist to coach the Offaly footballers would have sort of, you know, not got his back up, but he certainly would have been kind of wary of this direction that Heaney wanted to go.
Mm.
They managed to get him in on the basis that, look, if the Offaly footballers are going nowhere, and sure, look, if it keeps Heaney quiet, should we go along with it? What's the worst can happen?
You know,
they might win a match finally. So, like, that was good. That was good from Dowling's point of view. But I mean, yeah, as you say, we go on through the years, and there was various moments, even when the team was going pretty well, or certainly showing big signs of improvement, where you know, you would have had stuff at county board meetings and kind of AGM saying, well, we don't know, is McGee the right man for the job? And he would have had standoffs with one set of selectors. He had a standoff, and eventually those selectors backed off and he took autonomy. So I suppose by 1980-81 he had certainly kind of achieved that autonomy that he was looking for. But the late 70s was tough for him, and I mean, you know, everybody just thinks of 82, but we, you know, to kind of really grasp what they were at, awfully, I mean, they got to, I think it was, like, they lost, they always lost before they won. So, I mean, 79, they lose the Leinster final. 80, they win the Leinster final. 80, then they lose an All-Ireland semi-final in 1980 to Kerry. Then they get to the All-Ireland final in 81, lose it. Then come back and get to an All-Ireland final in 82 and win it. So, like, if you go back to those late 70s times when they're kind of knocking on the door and getting there, he was kind of fighting parallel battles in the background just to hold his autonomy and that. But as I say, by the time we said they had won the Leinster title in 80, he was pretty much the man.
Mm. And you mentioned 1980 and 81, they won them Leinster titles and ultimately lost to Kerry, one in the semi and one in the final. But looking back, I suppose in hindsight, 82 was such a shock. But was it really that much a shock? Because Offaly were common and strong and they seemed to have learned the lesson. So was it as much of a shock as people really think when you think of the progress Offaly were making gradually?
Sure. Yeah, I think if we try at least to kind of reposition ourselves back in the time. Like, in 1980, they played Kerry, in an All-Ireland football semi-final. Mm. And it ended up like something like 4-15 to 4-10. Mm. So it was a real crazy harem-scarem sort of game. And if you look back at the match, the few highlights that exist now of it, I mean, Kerry were miles ahead. Even though they only won by, 5 points in the end, they were miles ahead during the whole game. And it was just these splurges of goals. But even the goals came at times when really it was kind of putting a gloss on the scoreboard. Mm. So in 1980... you could say that Offaly were well beaten by Kerry. Mm. So then they come back in 81 and they win the Leinster Championship again. They beat Down in the All-Ireland semi-final and then they're into an All-Ireland final. And really, in some ways it does bear a little parallel with last year's All-Ireland final in Dublin and Tyrone. Mm. Purely in the sense that there was never a moment in the game, maybe early on last year when Tyrone went at Dublin, there was a bit of doubt, but really there was no doubt that Dublin were going to win that game. And in the same way in 81, you know, it was a stodgy, dull, awkward sort of match, the 81 final, that Kerry were sort of, they were 12-8 up and they weren't doing much, and then there's this magnificent goal by Jack O'Shea that if anybody who hasn't seen it, just go to YouTube and Google 1981 Kerry goal. It's that Kerry team at their most flowing, and it's everything that you just need to know about that Kerry team is in that goal. It's unbelievable. Mm. But so Kerry end up winning 1-12-8. Mm. McGee, after that game, really, really puts himself through the ringer. He was very disappointed with the team's performance. I think he was disappointed with their tactics as well, how he himself worked out what they were going to do. They made some switches and changes that just did not work. Mm. And Offaly actually ended up looking very flat on the day. So coming into 82, just to pick up your point again, like, was it a big shock? Offaly had been well beaten in 80. Mm. They had not really laid a glove on Kerry again in the 81 final. So yeah, they were there and they were considered, you know, probably up with their closest contenders. But in the absence of a Dublin, really, and in the absence of anybody else really making any, Galway was a kind of an old school sort of challenge, and of course, like, I mean, that in that time there really was not a lot coming out of Ulster. So in the absence of an old school challenge to Kerry, really, it was not, Offaly would have been considered, you know, awkward opposition, but really not the team that were going to take them out, which a little bit like now, like, you could say that about a lot of teams that are going now as well, you know.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see how it reflects and will history repeat itself. And I might ask you that before we wrap up, but just on the final, that great story with Seamus Darby coming on and scoring the goal, but you've an amazing piece in the book where Eugene McGee, he was kind of reluctant to throw him in. It was one of the selectors that persuaded them to bring him up. So it is, that makes the story even more remarkable that he was ultimately the hero.
Yeah, well, Darby's story, I mean, even quite, you know, take the goal out of it. I mean, the fact that he got back that year, like, I mean, he would have won All-Ireland medals back again in the early 70s when Offaly won their first couple of All-Irelands. Came back in the middle of 82, just showed some very, very good form for his club, got back in, played in the Leinster final, was really excellent in the Leinster final against Dublin that year. Really, awfully, I mean, their 82 final performance was the peak, but their performance against Dublin in the 82 Leinster final was equally, it was outstanding. And Derby played very, very well. Then he pulled a hamstring, so he missed the All-Ireland semi-final against Galway, so he wasn't going to make the team, but he was quite close. But yeah, you're right, like, I mean, and again, the way I did that particular part of the book it's just people speaking, you know, just basically quoting people in the first person. So you kind of get a mix of views of, well, who exactly made the call. A lot of people thought it was Eugene Mulligan, the PRO. Other people said that it was, well, McGee was voted down on the line. McGee himself said, well, it was 2-2, I think he said, you know, in between the selectors and himself, and he had the casting vote.
Yeah.
So he went for Derby in the end. He was going to put on a teenager, young lad. Fitzpatrick was his name, and he was going to put him on, but they just felt, I think, that putting on a young fella in that scenario maybe wasn't the best thing, whereas Derby had all the experience. I mean, Derby was in his early 30s at this stage, and he had been scoring goals for Road as well. He was in a bit of form, and they kind of went. I mean, in a way, Derby was actually the safer option, but then there was confusion, obviously, when he went in. Again, this is a thing that would have caused great confusion back then, wouldn't cause confusion now, but Derby went on, they took off a wing forward and put on Derby as a corner forward. So naturally, the Kerry defender, who was Tommy Doyle, who was playing wing back, picked up Derby, but he followed him into the corner.
Right, yeah.
Which wouldn't happen now. Like, you just, you know, a cornerback, or, you know, whatever. You just, it would be a marking job, but he just picked up his man and followed him into the corner, and that's, you know, if you talk to lads in Kerry, and that's no aspersion on Tommy Doyle, geez, he was an amazing player, but, you know, it was one of those things that just destabilised and maybe just slightly tilted their defence, that they had a wing back in a corner back at a time when specific positions meant an awful lot, and when the ball came in, then obviously he was kind of caught a little bit in front, whereas a corner back might have been either goal side or alongside of the corner forward, so just try and break it rather than attack it. But look, there's an old Mark Twain line, I think these are the hinges on which history swings, you know, and it's a small thing, you know.
Yeah, and again, it might be the benefit of hindsight before we leave that particular match, but did Kerry, people that were around back then will remember the Five in a Row song, and there was disputes in the newspaper about who was going to host. Was it going to be Tralee or Killarney that were going to host the homecoming for the Five in a Row? Did Kerry take their eye off the ball and get a bit too ahead of themselves and lost the focus that they might have had on previous years?
I think a few things happened outside of the hype, but just to address the hype, do you know what? It's like now, players didn't lose the run of themselves. Players are getting pulled, like, as they got off the train by county officials that Saturday, saying, you know, don't go off, don't get lost celebrating. We need you in Tralee on Monday night with the cup, this sort of thing. Bring it to this school and that school. This is on the Saturday morning before the game. And the players were kind of saying to these officials and these people, going, we have to win first. I mean, I don't think the players disrespected Offaly in any way in their heads. But look, when you are being bombarded with this stuff, number one, I'll tell you what it is. It's a tiring thing. It's actually a physical and mental drain on your energy. And I mean, this is the thing. It's not so much getting bombarded by it on the radio and the television and on the newspapers. You can turn off the radio and the television or not read the newspapers. It's when you're going into your local shop.
Yes.
Or when you're coming out of mass or you're going into mass or you're whatever, picking up the kids from school, or you're walking down the street and fellas are going, we'll have a good night next week now when you come back to the cup, or we'll see you in the school, or we got to get you down to the club before you even win the game. That is exhausting.
Yeah.
So it's not so much that you're complacent, it's just that you're, I think that happens to them for sure. I mean, if you ask, I remember Gerard O'Keefe, who played cornerback that particular day, I remember him saying to me, like, that he reckoned that of the players that played for Kerry that day, five of them played up to their standard. And I, you know, looking back at the game, probably not far wrong.
Yeah,
like they still played well, but and Offaly played really well. But you still needed a dip from a few different players for this thing to happen. And I mean, there was other things that happened. I don't know if you want to go into them or not. Like, but there was other bits and pieces. Like, you know, they got caught playing Cork a few times too many than they would normally have, and they were rough enough matches, a lot of those, you know, little energy suckers that they wouldn't have, that Kerry wouldn't have had previous to that. Pat Spillane had an injury that he really shouldn't, he came on at half time, he shouldn't have come on. There was stuff, they did stuff that maybe in the heel of the hunt if they look back now, maybe they would have made different decisions.
Yeah, and I mentioned at the outset, of course, everyone will be talking about Dublin this year, whether they can get the five in a row. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think I was reading your predictions in the Sunday Times the week before last. Would I be right in saying you opted to go for Mayo to win All Ireland this year?
Yep, absolutely. It's not with any great confidence I think Mayo, but I'm just not on board with the five in a row.
Right.
I do blame McGee and I blame Offaly and I blame Kerry for it, because there is really no logical reason why Dublin shouldn't be winning the five in a row. In fact, in many ways, they're probably a bit better equipped than that Kerry team. I mean, that Kerry team, it wasn't that they didn't have a strong panel, but they opted, I mean, O'Dwyer basically opted to work off of about 18, 19 players, whereas with Dublin, you know, Jim Gavin obviously works off a lot bigger number of players, and he keeps the panel hungry and fresh by doing just that, by keeping the competition high. But yeah, I mean, there's just I just noticed few little small parallels, little things that just make me question whether Dublin, like, I suppose it's, you know what it is? It's a little bit like that Dublin are possibly, they feel more vulnerable this year than maybe they have in other years, but that doesn't mean that they're vulnerable enough to not win the All-Ireland. But right now I just have a sense that if Mayo can keep winning, Mayo can just keep winning and get to the final, where they'll more than likely play Dublin, I think they'll be in a very, very strong position. And you cannot underestimate, I don't care what anybody says, you cannot underestimate the noise that's going to come with the five in a row as the year goes on. And any amount of media controls, any amount of taking lads out of the headlights, trying to protect them, you can't protect them. It's impossible. As I said there earlier, it's the day-to-day noise. That's the stuff. That's the stuff that gets in at you. It's not the big stuff on television or the newspaper interviews that don't happen anyway. It's just the day-to-day. It's the work. It's the chat at work. It's the just knocking around the place. You can't escape it. Now, it's a different... They'll say, we've been doing it for 4 years. Mm. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
It's a totally different kind of conversation. Mm. And it's going to be a gigantic test for them.
Yeah, well, it's shaping up. There was a couple of cracking matches at the weekend, and it's shaping up to be a great, great summer of football. Listen, Michael, I really appreciate you've been very generous with your time. Thanks a million for taking the time and sharing your memories of that great Kerry team and that great match between Kerry and Offaly. Thanks a million for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks a million.
That was great. That was Michael Foley of the Sunday Times, who shared his memories of that great Kerry Offaly team, and it'll be something we'll be covering on the show, the GAA Championships this year, as Dublin begin their quest to win five in a row, and to start that a doubleheader, and they're on at 7 p.m. where they will face off in Louth. And I mentioned two cracking games in Ulster at the weekend. I was fortunate enough myself to be down at the Cavan Monaghan game, a real shock there, like a really, really great game, and another great game between Armagh and Down. So hopefully it's the sign of a great summer. That's I'm just looking at the time. That's pretty much it for this week. I'd like to thank my guest Michael Foley of the Sunday Times, author of that book Kings of September, the day Offaly denied Kerry five in a row. I'm going to leave you with a piece of music. Until then, thanks for tuning in, and I will talk to you at the same time next week.